Ernestine Anderson with All Blues. It's from her 1983 album, Big City. This famous jazz standard was composed by Miles Davis, recorded on his album, Kind of Blue, the best-selling jazz album of all time, released on August the 17th, 1959. The lyrics, so beautifully interpreted here by Anderson, were written by Oscar Brown Jr. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. The situation remains tense in St. Louis, Missouri, over the death of 18-year-old Mansour Baal-Bey, who was killed under highly questionable circumstances last Wednesday during the search of a house by two police officers. The officers, who have not been identified through their attorney, Brian Milliken, said they fired on Baal-Bey in self-defense because the teenager pointed a gun at them as he fled the property as it was being raided. But witnesses have said Baal-Bey was unarmed. Others, including some members of his family, have said he was near the house, but fleeing from, but not fleeing from it during the raid, they said. On Friday, St. Louis medical examiner Michael Graham said in a report that Mansour Baal-Bey was shot in the back. One of four bullets the police officers fired at him, and it pierced his heart. Also on Friday, Circuit Attorney Jennifer Joyce announced that she was conducting an investigation. We're hoping to get our guest, Jermaine Wooten, who is the attorney in St. Louis representing the family. He has been caught up in, as you could understand, very critical meetings and legal issues dealing with the situation. And he had tried to reach us earlier, and we didn't get through to him, so we'll be trying as we continue this conversation. What I want to talk about here is that we have been through this many times, and it becomes a kind of procedural issue, an administrative issue, an official issue, and it just isn't breaking. The pattern isn't breaking at all. As I speak to you today, I can tell you how outraged I am about the consistency of this pattern. And I just don't know what it would take other than a scenario that no one wants to contemplate, just out and out rebellion all across the country. I just don't want it to go there. But the question remains, when does this stop? I asked this question before. But we see the pattern emerging time and time again on so many levels, and it is very, very, very disturbing. I understand and I accept that it can't always be the case where it's so one-sided. But we can't but ask the question, why is it appearing so one-sided? Why is it usually the case that we have police officers who are white and we have victims who are African-American and Latino and male on both sides? I don't understand how our community, as a society, I don't understand as a society, let me put it in its broadest terms, I don't understand how, as a society, we continue to function with so many indicators of a lopsided arrangement. And it becomes just, you know, a matter of convenience or political expediency. But we don't see that there is a real deep-seated outrage, a deep-seated feeling of shame, responsibility, or concern, some humanitarian concern. And this also is an indicator of how entrenched our society is in this business of racial divisions. And now the agencies that reinforce and rigidify these lopsided arrangements in our society, police departments being one, when does America get it, is a question that we've been asking over and over again. When will this country get it, that this is so wrong on so many levels, that we have this thing, it's like the sword of Damocles hanging over our collective heads. And we should be ashamed. As a society, we should be appalled. We should be outraged that in 2015, we are still hamstrung by these limitations in our society, by this vicious way of existing. I don't know the circumstances of this latest killing, but I do know this. We should be at a point now, by this time, when we should be able to see this business of policing very differently. We should be. Why is it happening? Why is it continuing? And how could people be blamed after reaching a point saying, enough is enough, we are going to do whatever? And this is where chaos ends up in the mix. Chaos prevails. There is no logic then when people explode. There's no logic to the actions in the sense. It is about the release of tensions long in the making. There is no thinking. There is no sitting down and figuring things out. There is no place at that point for dialogue and constructive engagement with each other. All that is gone. And although we have witnessed dire predictions from time to time about the imminence of such a thing, it seems not to bother this system that controls us all. It seems not to bother the leadership, including those who say they're very progressive and, in fact, socialist, democratic socialist, whatever it is they say. They're telling you, this is your problem. We see this and this and this as the problems. Yes, we hear you expressing your problems from your point of view, and we acknowledge that. But really, the way we see the world is the way the world really is. And we get the same message from the right, the left, the dead center. It doesn't matter. We're getting the same message. No matter how urgent you say the problem is, no matter how pervasive it, no matter how entrenched, no matter how lethal the problem is, we can't get people to understand that. From a community's point of view, this is a huge issue, and that you should pay attention to it. But on the other hand, we also have to say that so much time has passed by, and yet we are, as a society, especially a society wanting to create beneficial change, we are perhaps either intentionally ignorant of history or lamentably naive about how politics works. The circumstances are such, and people would now say, well, let's get into the clinical matters of this particular situation. Let's get into the facts of the situation. And I'm saying, you could get into the facts all you want. My argument is, I see this in the context of the big picture. The facts will pertain specifically to this case. But this case fits into the big picture, and I'm interested in the big picture. We will hear about the facts. The medical examiner has said the bullet was in the back, pierced his heart, and now the lawyers are saying, well, there are any number of reasons why that might have happened, and we are now supposed to get into this back and forth about what it means and where did the bullets come from and did the officers really fear for their life? Was this young man armed? Did he in fact point a gun? All of these things we will get into because that's the way they deal with it on a case-by-case basis. And even so, when we've dealt with these issues on a case-by-case basis, and we have seen overwhelmingly the same pattern emerging, the police do commit these crimes, these killings, these murders, the prosecutorial system defends them or impedes justice in a conspiratorial way, and they get away with it and they walk. I remember so many of these cases. I remember so many courtroom cases that I've covered where any reasonable person would be expected to come to the same conclusion. Any reasonable person would be outraged at the way things turned out. Any reasonable person would say, well, okay, this was a very bad situation, but we will put it before a jury and it will, you know, it will all pan out. Justice will be served. All of that. I'll give you an example. On Thanksgiving Day, it was in 1976, in Brooklyn, a 15-year-old kid, just in the housing projects in the Cypress Hills, comes upon a police officer, Robert Torsney. And there was some kind of a hubbub at the housing projects, and he saw some police there. And he just walked up to Robert Torsney, and he says, what's happening? He asked him, what's happening? You know, what's going on? Tarzny takes his gun and shoots him dead right there, point blank. And Randolph Evans becomes yet another reason for this discussion that we continue to have today. What was the reason? Obviously, Randolph Evans played a role in his own death. Obviously, the police officer, being a police officer, would never have done something so silly. He would never have killed an innocent child. Well, what do you know? At trial, I kid you not, at trial, they went so far as to invent a psychological illness to explain the police officer's action. You believe that? They said he suffered a psychotic episode. The cops suffered a psychotic episode upon a 15-year-old boy, black boy, walking up to him and saying, what's happening? What's going on? And that interaction caused the police officer, Robert Tarzny, to experience a spontaneous psychotic episode, which caused him to remove his revolver, aim it at the head of this little boy, and shoot him dead right there on Thanksgiving Day. Now, by anybody's stretch of the imagination, this would have been an open and shut case. Until we learned in the court that Robert Tarzny didn't actually commit a murder. He suffered a psychotic episode. Well, the end of the story is he just walked away. He didn't go through a real trial because they now blamed this on his mental state of mind. They couldn't in any way prove that Randolph Evans was in some way, even in the remotest sense, a threat to Robert Tarzny's life. And so Robert Tarzny was able to kind of walk away from a charge of murder. Found not guilty by reason of insanity. I remember a trial in which a white transit officer shot a black undercover cop. At trial, they said that the bullet made a U-turn. I mean, when you hear all these things happening, bullet made a U-turn. I kid you not. The bullet made a U-turn and shot the black officer in the back. I have been through enough of these. I have witnessed enough of these. I've covered enough of these cases. And they continue. And the charade continues. And it now becomes a matter of who will mount the best legal battle? Not about this, whether this person killed was deserved to be killed at all. That's not the point here. The point is now we have done it, the deed, and now we can justify our actions so that the operative relationship between the community and the police remains intact. And that is, we are law enforcement in black communities and Latino communities, and we do policing in white communities. And this has been going on. So what will it take? And do you know, if there were to be an eruption of some sort, people will say, well, look at them again. The black people are just out of control. What is the point of doing this and that or the next? What is the point of all this outrage? What is the point of all these protests and demonstrations and whatnot? And if you are going to protest, they want to control that too. You should protest, you know, first you get a permit and we will permit you to protest. And we will have National Guardsmen and so forth, and for the safety, for your safety. We will do everything possible to contain your rage. So, at some point, and it looks like it should be sooner than later, at some point, there will be a determination made, perhaps by people who are completely outside the sphere of influence, perhaps by people we don't even know. But a decision will be made that enough is enough. This is not supposed to continue. This is not the way a society should function. And frankly, personally, the more I cover these cases, the more we talk about these cases, the more I believe that it is time to just stop the begging and pleading for justice. It isn't happening. That isn't happening. And it hasn't been happening for hundreds of years. So what is the alternative? I keep asking, what is the alternative? We had the specter of the NAACP local leader in NAACP president in St. Louis standing next to the circuit attorney who says she was going to launch an independent investigation into the shooting death of Mansour Baalbei. And pretty much standing next to her saying, yes, there's hope that she will do the right thing. This is the same woman who has yet to prosecute police officers in two recent police killings in which the elements are there to suggest that the people killed certainly didn't warrant it. The circumstances didn't warrant it. I saw the video myself of the shooting of one of the victims. And you say to yourself, well, wait a minute. Everybody could recognize a mentally ill man. He had just come out of a convenience store. And he wasn't harming anybody. People were watching him. He was just talking out of his head. The police roll up, and next thing you know, Kajimi Powell is on the sidewalk dead. I mean, they just blew the man away. And you can see that the videotape shows exactly what happened. And that happened last year. Nothing so far has happened. We have Von Derrick Myers last October, still right there in St. Louis. These are St. Louis cases. And the same circuit attorney who is talking and being basically rubber stamped by the local NAACP leader has produced zero results in these cases. Too many of these cases going on. And you know, you talk about it. And it's with a sense of frustration, but even within myself, and I'm not connected to these families, I could just imagine the rage many of these families have about losing their loved ones in these most undignified ways and just plain wrong and inhumane ways. These are executions, public executions. We condemn places like Saudi Arabia for conducting public executions where a squad of people just show up and somebody pulls out a sword and next thing you know, your head is separated from your body. And that's the way they do it. Here we have police officers given the same authority, the same rights and privileges and protections under the law to dispatch people if they feel like it. And then even when they are wrong, they're given protection. The unions come to their protection. The system comes to their protection. And it is almost always at the expense of the life of someone of color in this country. And then you listen to the tone of the public debate, and the tone of the public debate says, that's not a national problem. What are you talking about? Income inequality, that's the number one problem. We're talking about something else. When the people are telling you, this is a number one problem for us too, and they say, no, that can't be it. In political season, police brutality and lethal use of force, the militarization of police, these things don't rank high enough on a list. And even if they do, we're not going to recognize that. We're going to move beyond that. Your problems are the ones I tell you you have. I haven't told you that you have a police brutality problem, so you don't have that. In short order, I sense that people are going to say, we don't care anymore what you think. What you think is no longer relevant, has no justification. What you think has been consistent from the word go. We know what you think based on the evidence that we have of inaction, of letting these systems of control go out of whack, to the point where people are terrified. Mothers are fearing. Parents are fearing when their sons leave at home, and they're concerned, the stress they carry all day. Hopefully, I'll see little Jimmy when I get home. One parent told me just recently, she advises her young son, who, if he goes to a party, don't come home. Don't go to a party where you can't just find a couch or a seat someplace and sleep a couple of hours and come home in the morning at daylight. This is how a large part of America is living. We have accepted the brutality of public policy that says everything that is happening right now, well, we'll allow it to happen and continue. Well, we didn't get our guest. As I said, we would try. It was understandable. He's caught up in court matters challenging this most recent killing in St. Louis by police officers. But we will continue that discussion another day. I want to take a break and come back, and we'll talk about Joe Biden's supposedly imminent interest in running for president, what it means for Hillary Clinton, what it means for the Democratic Party, what it means for the presidential race of 2016. Your thoughts right after this. Talking about the sea in the sky, and I'm talking about you and I. The sea, the sky. You're listening to PRN FM, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN FM, and I'm Eutrice Lead. Well, it seems as if there's a new kink in the race for President 2016. Joe Biden supposedly was hobnobbing and meeting very quietly, and not so quietly because it's been discussed all over the place, about a possible bid for the presidential in the presidential election of 2016. And if he runs, you know, frankly, you know, I don't see any big difference between Biden and others. But, you know, your thoughts would be interesting on this. What does it mean if Joe Biden does run? How would it likely shake up the Democratic Party? How would it affect Hillary Clinton, if you think it will? And what does it mean, actually, in the scheme of things in politics? Would that be a sign that the Democratic Party, in fact, has come to view Hillary Clinton's candidacy as having way too much baggage than it can carry, the party structure itself can carry? As you know, Hillary Clinton is the front runner in this presidential race under the Democratic banner. Although Bernie Sanders is gaining in some areas, but some people say, well, there's really not too much of a difference. There are people who question Bernie Sanders' credentials as a socialist, a democratic socialist, since he so often is aligned with Democratic Party principles and policies that are retrograde, to say the least. And in comes Joe Biden, and he says, well, maybe I will run. He doesn't have very much time to make that official if he intends to run. And it will be a truncated campaign. But when we look at Donald Trump, we see that truncated campaigns have a possibility of rising to the top, because it's just a matter of manipulation and very effective marketing and a compliant media coverage. But what does Joe Biden bring, in your view? What does a possible Biden run do to the political scheme of things that we've been looking at so far? It's good to observe and see what it says. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I'd be interested in what your take is with this new wrinkle in the race for the White House 2016. Hillary Clinton is dealing with some pretty interesting issues. Number one is that she's falling in her appeal, her public appeal, as being measured by polls. They're seeing a disenchantment. And of course, this most recent scandal with the emails that are supposed to be classified that were held on her personal server is the most recent of them. We still have her unresolved role in the attack on the U.S. embassy in Benghazi. But we have more than that. We have Hillary Clinton's connection with so many things that have gone against us as a society. And we see, in many cases, Hillary Clinton's campaign as just, a flip side of what the Republicans are offering. And the Republicans are offering an unreality, a new reality, a very different reality from the one we had envisioned. And beyond that, just the philosophy itself of the Democratic Party. What is it? I don't know. The Republicans, say what you will, they're real clear. They're very, very clear about what they stand for, whether you like them or not. What are the Democrats standing for? What is Hillary standing for? And is a Joe Biden any different from a Bernie Sanders, any different from a Hillary Clinton? Or is this a way of the Democratic Party trying its best to rein things in and kind of save a potentially hazardous situation with Hillary Clinton's latest problems? Joel from New York, you're on the air.
Whether you like them or not. Hi, Latrice. How you doing this
Hi.
Morning? I usually make it a habit not to comment too much on palace politics, because in the long run, it's really so irrelevant, because the more things change, as they say, the more they stay the same once these guys or gals get in. But I frankly think that Hillary Clinton is going to win this nomination and win it relatively easily. And all we have to do is look at the structure of party politics to understand why. If you look at the history of Democratic Party primaries and the insurgencies that have been running, starting with the Jackson candidacy in 84 and 88, then there was Kucinich in 2000, 2004. The insurgencies, they incite a lot of enthusiasm and fervor, and sometimes they catch a little fire and the candidates draw crowds. But in the end, it's the institutional framework of a party that matters and the money that matters. And all of the big labor union leaders are all lining up, including the UFT leaders, by the way, and the NEA leaders, to support Clinton, even though there's, and this is a good sign, there's a sign of rank-and-file anger in what remains of the labor union. The same is true of the big deal feminists. I mean, early on, people like Gloria Steinem very openly began to support. So, and the Wall Street money is not going to disappear. It's there in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So, you know, these candidates, such as someone like Sanders, are going to excite some fervor early on, but it's not going to really mean very much in the end. And, of course, Sanders knows that as well, which is why he has already committed himself to support the candidate once the primary season is over. As for Biden, Biden has always been, and he comes from Delaware. That should be enough for anybody to realize what's going on here, because Delaware is controlled by the DuPont family, and the DuPont family is intimately connected with the CIA. It's one of the reasons why Biden, if you look at his political career, has never seen a right-wing authoritarian dictator that he didn't want to cozy up to. One can imagine this, if he actually miraculously somehow managed to wrest the nomination away from Clinton, he would even be worse, if you can even imagine it. So that's a situation that, you know, we stand. I think that it behooves all of us to recognize that all of this is a kind of irrelevancy, and that we are heading down a road to perdition. And the problem with most of these major candidates is that they don't realize the extent of the crisis that we're in. Everything profound economic and political consequences of these runaway climate catastrophes that we're experiencing now, to the possibility of nuclear war. I tell you, Utrice, in all the years that I've been looking at the political situation when I didn't even know what politics were about, I used to draw pictures of Marines fighting it out with the Red Chinese when I was 7 years old. So I've been following politics really since the Eisenhower administration, and I really think that the possibility of nuclear war now is greater than it has ever been. And the public doesn't realize this. And those that are in power have no sense of responsibility to try to stop it. Even the crazy politicians that were in office in the 1950s and the 1960s were fearful enough to at least prevent nuclear war from. These people are actually beginning to encourage it. So the issues are not being discussed. The Sanders candidacy is going to incite, because of his, you know, his burly union floor activism, and his moderate social democratic proposals are going to incite, you know, some enthusiasm. But in the end, the structural and institutional framework of Democratic Party politics and the primary politics will win their way, and Clinton will receive the nomination. And it's up to us to think about alternatives, because these people, you trace, these people are going down, and unfortunately, they're going to bring us down with them.
Well, one fast question. What is there a difference between a Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton?
Sorry, I didn't hear the last part of it. Could you just say again?
Is there a difference between a Joe Biden as a potential candidate and Hillary Clinton? And what does a possible entrance into this race mean if he should decide to run, as far as the Democrats are concerned?
Maybe Biden feels that Clinton is faltering, but I think he should know better. As for differences, I don't think there's really any difference, except that he's, as I said before, if it can be imagined, he's further to the right than Clinton because of his ties to DuPont and his ties to the Central Intelligence Agency. And he is always, I mean, once in a while, Clinton will show some sympathetic support for somebody who's really a social reformer out there in the world, but not Biden. Biden has always, and he's even a more fervent Zionist than Clinton, although that might be more a matter of, what they say on the stump than the actual policy. They're both pretty far out when it comes to supporting, the right-wing government in Israel. So I think there's really no difference. They're both neoliberals. They're both going to promote corporate control of international trade. Biden's son now runs a gas consortium in Ukraine. Can you imagine that? He's associated with this corrupt Ukrainian government. And Biden has very openly called for heavy armor and for very sophisticated weapon systems to be placed on the border of Russia. So I think he's even worse than Clinton, although he comes from the same national security neoliberal outlook. That's why I really don't see why the Sanders candidacy has elicited so much. I mean, the people who are flocking to his rallies understandably are flocking there because they're getting screwed. Everyone is getting screwed. But we have to understand that the Democratic Party and that Democratic Party structure is part of this screwing that is going on. So, I mean, frankly, I think that it's a parlor game whether Biden receives the nomination or Clinton. The problems are going to be extreme and are not going to be dealt with whoever gets that nomination. And by the way, Clinton will win the presidency very, very easily. And all the big money is a little worried about Trump because, the reason why Trump is doing so well is because the basic constituency of the Republican Party, and here I'm going to be a little stereotypical, but I think I'm making sense. The basic constituency is essentially overweight, angry, ruddy, middle-aged white men. And all he had to do was utter the word Mexican, and he had them in his camp. But once the primary season is over, he's going to have to get more than those ruddy guys to vote for him if he wants the nomination, and Wall Street knows it. That's why they're putting their money in Clinton. But it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. The fact is that what we have to worry about are the crises that are coming down the road, including economic collapse and climate disaster and racial killings and social discord. That's all coming. And we need to ask ourselves, what can we do to not only to wrest power from, but to begin to assert a political independence for ourselves? And not
no
depend
question
upon,
about it. No question.
On them.
And this is something that we talk about constantly here, but it is still important to observe and analyze what's going on. Clarence.
Oh, no doubt about it. The people should know where Biden is coming from because it helps us to understand the character of the Democratic Party today, that it is a national security war party tied to neoliberalism, tied to Wall Street, with moribund, ossified, and comatose leaders who used to call themselves liberal who are just associating with them because they want part of the spoils.
Thanks, Joel, for your call today. From Brooklyn, Clarence, you're on the air.
Hi, Therese. How you doing?
Fine, thank you. What are your thoughts?
Good to hear you.
Thank you.
I hate to quote Bob Grant, but Biden has always been a consistent faker, fraud, and a phony. His record shows that he is one to ingratiate himself with the Wall Street brokers, the enemies of the poor and the oppressed. He doesn't have a record for even causing his late son to do the right thing when there was lynchings going on in Delaware of black men. One was successfully lynched, one broke away and was on the way to the office of the son, of the office of the son who recently died. and the son just closed the office hours earlier, so this man couldn't complain. But we're talking about Biden has no racial sensitivity about the lynchings of black men and women, because it's already came out in the report that the cause of death for Sandra Bland was indeed a homicide, not a suicide. The mainstream media is playing it down. It was only reported once on CNN. But Biden is someone that I can guarantee you I wouldn't buy a new car from. Forget a used car. I wouldn't buy a new car from. His records show he has always been more of a political opportunist and more cautious rather than courageous. And as Errol Corbett always would say, you are what your record say you are.
I don't really
have any confidence in neither Hillary or Biden. They're like the transit authority using those retread tires on the transit buses. I used to work for transit for 27 years. They always would use retread tires on the rear tires, the rear wheels of the bus, but the best of tires was on the front. But what sense does that make? You tell me. But the idea that a retread easily wear down, can wear out. And tried and tested, Biden is a loose cannon. He's known to run his mouth when it's not necessary for him to be so outrageous with the statements that he makes. And when he's
I want to ask you, Clarence. I mean, go a little broader if you can. What does this mean, as you, in your view, about the Democratic Party, the state of affairs with the Democratic Party, and particularly at this juncture with the purported interest by Biden to run for president. What does it say about the status of Hillary Clinton's campaign in the eyes of the biggies of the Democratic Party?
Oligarchy, they are very uptight that Hillary may not do so well with the scandal that she seemed not to be able to put a clamp on and to move on to other issues. The Democratic Party is ran by people who know so little about so much, and they just don't seem to realize that they have been corrupted and have no record of upsetting the apple cart. Even when blacks have consistently given their support to the Democratic Party, including Bill Clinton, and with friends like the Clinton, black people don't need any enemies. And Hillary is really, like you said a while back, they are the Bonnie and Clyde of the Democratic Party, and there are those in the Democratic Party that hate black people's guts, but they don't tell black people what is there behind the hidden card, because they know that we are so deaf, dumb, and blind, we'll go along like good children and put Hillary in there, and there has been no concession demands. Look at this, how this whole thing scenario. There's been no concession demands from the NAACP. The Progressive Baptist Convention just recently had their convention. There's no reason why they should still call themselves progressive when there has been no demands of the Democratic oligarchy to let them know that black people will not just take it laying down. When blacks voted very overwhelmingly for Al Gore in Florida, the Democratic regime oligarchy allowed the Republicans to have it their way, and blacks were deliberately disenfranchised. And the Democratic Party, when you need them to stand up, they have a history of always using us like a pimp uses a prostitute. And then he tells next election, we'll see what happens next election. Maybe we'll do something for you next time. But right now, you just go in the corner and sit down and shut up, and we'll pay off a few of your so-called spokespersons like the skinny anaconda. You know who I'm talking about. And he used to be the fat one. Now he's the skinny one. And
Move away from the personal, and let's get to the substance of what it is you're saying.
Yeah. All right. Okay. There's no reason to believe that the Democratic Party is going to be anything other than no runs, no hits, and many errors. That's all.
What?
They are bankrupt. They have no vision, and they don't even include us in the mix to deal with the platform issues coming up very soon in the convention, and added that concession demands is not, I mean, Black Lives Matter, it's a nice try, but I'm saying when they went to confront Hillary, they had no platform to confront her to make her say, okay, you give me a thought, to non-compromising thought. They had nothing to tell her that would make her sit up and take notice. So we're talking about, you're talking aloud, saying nothing, and when you get ready to put to the test, there's nothing there. The Democratic Party is composed of phony liberals, reactionaries like a wolf wearing sheepskin. And, hey, look, the governor of Missouri is a Democrat. And you saw how he came down hard on those blacks in Ferguson. I mean, like, what the dickens is a blue dog Democrat other than a weather vane person who sticks the index finger in the air and see how they're going to do anything, but it's all done for political expediency. Blacks are taken as third-class fools in this country for 400 years, and we still have not gotten the message that they hate our guts. We can't even get the Congressional Black Caucus, well, all Democrats now, to even get the president to erase from the Constitution 3/5. It's still in the Constitution. We're the only ethnic group that's defined in the Constitution. I mean, you can't even get this president to pardon both Jack Johnson and Marcus Garvey. He said it was a waste of time. Did the Congressional Black Caucus say anything to say, oh, Mr. President, you can't do that. You can't do that. Those men are long dead. They are no threat to society. Their names was tarnished, ruined for life because of the image that they represented to as far as in the white media. But the very idea of blacks who are supposed to be in the know, our so-called leaders, they do nothing to embarrass the oligarchy of the Democratic Party because they all have cut out a niche for themselves looking for a political promotion.
Well, thank you for your opinion today. Thanks for offering and participating in the program. I appreciate it.
Stay well.
That brings us to the end of our program today. We will reconnect with our guest. He, as I said, was in court and dealing with this matter that is fast unfolding in St. Louis, Missouri, the killing of Mansour Baal-Bey, and we'll follow that. But we'll return to each other, same time, tomorrow, and we will continue the conversation then. Keep it right here on PRN.FM for more great programming. A pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.
See the sky.